thank you for downloading this programme from the BBC. In this edition of Profile, James Silver looks at Boris Johnson, whose popularity has been boosted by the success of the Olympic Games.
Boris Johnson dangling from a zip wire over a London park earlier this week in a publicity stunt that went wrong. With union flags in each fist and trousers hoisted painfully, it was as though the capital's mayor was caught in a grotesque parody of an Olympic event.
Gold medal!
He even called for a gold medal. Most politicians filmed in such a predicament would be jeered at for being gaffe-prone, hapless, or worse. But not Mr. Johnson, whose fast-rising popularity was confirmed in two polls in the past few days. London's mayor has a rare gift for laughing off mishaps. Time and again, he stumbled, fallen, here into a river.
No, Boris, can you stop there for one sec?
Oh, no!
Shaken himself dry, sheepdog style, and cracked a joke.
The water was very refreshing and I thoroughly recommend it.
Brand Boris has become ubiquitous and instantly recognisable.
I saw Boris cycling across London recently and there he was with his blonde hair flying gently in the wind. And there's this teddy bear lovability to him.
But while one writer branded him the Olympic Village idiot, London's mayor is far more than some bumbling comic sideshow. He is, in fact, on the rise and enjoying an Olympic bounce. Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson was born in 1964 in New York City, where his father Stanley was studying. Mr. Johnson Sr. had popped out for pizza and managed to miss his eldest son's birth.
I went to see him, but I wasn't able actually to identify what he was or which he was, because all the babies had been, you know, lined up in their little cocoons. All one could see was their feet, but all the feet were black. And so I wasn't able to distinguish which was Boris's feet. And the reason they're all black is that they'd been dipped in black ink, because in New York in those days, if you wanted to take the identity of a baby, you took their footprints. But we sorted that out in the end, and I was delighted to meet Boris for the first time, black feet or not.
His father remembers his flair in the classroom and doggedness on the sports field.
Talented, interested in the classics, very interested in sport. My recollection is of him playing rugby at Eton, just smashing through to score a try in the corner. That's the kind of image I have, force and determination.
From Eton College, Boris Johnson went up to Balliol College, Oxford, where he was president of the Oxford Union. He was also a member of the now notorious Bullingdon Club, alongside David Cameron and Chancellor George Osborne. His journalistic career began inauspiciously. As a Times trainee reporter, he was dispatched to the Midlands to do a stint on local paper, the Wolverhampton Express and Star. Peter Rhodes is a former chief feature writer there.
So this is a, you know, provincial newsroom. Most of the people there are wearing, you know, old jackets and cord trousers. And there he is, this vision of loveliness in this very expensive chalk stripe suit. Very poised sort of person, as I recall. If you imagine a stable full of pit ponies and this thoroughbred racehorse had suddenly been introduced into it and didn't entirely understand what he was doing there and nobody else understand what he was there for either, that's the sort of image you have.
Mr. Johnson would later claim that his stay in Wolverhampton helped make him a Tory, one opposed to what he saw as a smothering welfare state. His journalistic talents, meanwhile, were deemed to lie in column and feature writing rather than foot-in-the-door reporting. Next stop was the Daily Telegraph. There, while his coruscating copy was admired, his diligence was rather less so. Charles Moore is a former editor of the Daily Telegraph.
He was always unbelievably late, and I really mean always, and I really mean unbelievably, so that sometimes it would be sort of half an hour after the absolute last possible deadline. And I knew, of course, that this was likely to happen. So I would ring him up at 5 o'clock when his deadline was 5:30. And I'd say, how's the copy going, Boris? And Boris would say, yeah, nearly there. Yeah, 10 minutes, yeah. And then you'd gradually realise by asking a couple more questions that he hadn't even started to write it. And in some cases that he didn't even know what it was going to be about. Finally, I realised the only way to deal with this was to spike it, as we say in the trade. That's to say, throw the article away, even though it arrived, just to frighten him. And I had an article ready to put in by somebody else. And this did frighten him and annoy him very much. But he was only a good boy for about a month after that, and then it was back to the bad old ways.
By 1997, Boris Johnson's political ambitions were jockeying with his journalistic duties. After failing to overturn a staunch Labour majority in Clwyd South, he finally became the MP for Henley 4 years later. Already editor of The Spectator, Mr Johnson didn't have to wait long to get his chance. By 2004, he was Shadow Arts Minister. But it was a tenure that was to be short-lived. At the time, The Spectator magazine had been branded the Sextator for the tangled love lives of some of its team, including Mr Johnson, who was by then on his second marriage and a father. The magazine then published an article which sneered at Liverpool for its supposed culture of vicarious victimhood after a hostage from the city was beheaded in Iraq. Michael Howard led the Conservatives at the time.
Well, I was pretty angry when I read the article, and so I saw Boris and said, I want you to go to Liverpool and I want you to apologise to the people of Liverpool. And to do him credit, that's exactly what he did. And I don't think it was a very comfortable experience for him, but he did it, and I think he did it in good part.
But then came the revelations about an affair. In the end, that was why you were forced to sack him, wasn't it?
I wasn't forced to, and I think I made a mistake. I think I was wrong to sack him, and it's something I regret. I'm not entirely sure that it had any lasting effect, because Boris is his own man and does what he thinks appropriate at whatever time and in whatever situation he's in.
There's also a view, even among his friends, that the mayor is on occasions over-reliant on using his charm as a get-out-of-jail-free card. This can irk those around him, says the former Telegraph and Spectator editor, Charles Moore.
Sometimes people feel let down by him or deceived, and sometimes he does let people down. One can't deny it. But I think that one reason that Boris is forgiven quite easily by people is because, of course, charm is a quality which enables you to get away with things. That's something that he very well understands. And, of course, when you realise that he's using it sort of mechanically, that does annoy you. But you do want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Mr Johnson bounced back from his political difficulties and was reintroduced into the shadow frontbench team. David Cameron, perhaps twitchy at the thought of such a boisterous talent lurking on the back benches, made him Shadow Minister for Higher Education.
London calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down.
But then another, rather more enticing position became vacant. Conservative candidate for London Mayor. According to one report, Boris Johnson, a long-time fan of the Rolling Stones and The Clash, took some persuading to run. But once the decision was made, the incumbent, Ken Livingstone, said Mr Johnson was the Tory he feared most. His shock-haired rival's fame, he said, would give him the edge on the doorstep. Liberal Democrat candidate Brian Paddick twice ran against them both.
The most common response I got on the doorstep was, I'm voting for Boris because he's a laugh. And I think, you know, that sort of sums it up. He is a real character, a very likeable character. And that's why a lot of people vote for him. And they don't look any further than that.
You seem to be saying he's insubstantial. He's not a heavyweight.
That's the magic of Boris Johnson. Superficially, he puts on this act of being, you know, messed up hair, bit chaotic. But in fact, I know that he is actually a very intelligent, very clever, very serious politician. But that's not the image he creates in front of the public.
Mayor Johnson's 2008 victory with a popular mandate of almost 1.2 million votes was followed by, one could argue, a chequered first term in office. Banning alcohol on the tube, lowering the murder rate, and his trumpeting of Crossrail have been hailed, not least by his camp, as achievements. But there were low points too, not least public transport fare increases, which have riled London's commuters. Then came last summer's London riots. Those four jittery August days were the mayor's most torrid. Andrew Jimson, Boris Johnson's biographer.
He was in an enormous thing called a Winnebago camper van in the Rocky Mountains with his wife and children. He was very, very reluctant to come back. And when he did get back, then he made a mess of his first public appearance down in Clapham. And he made the odd joke, which came out wrong, and it was his lowest point as mayor. Now, he retrieved this situation only about a day later when he went on the Today programme And he tore up Tory policy on police cuts and said, now is not the time to be thinking about cutting police budgets. And he had not cleared this with the Prime Minister. He was making up policy on the Today programme. Boris became the opposition to the Conservative government, which is quite an achievement, considering that he is himself a member of the Conservative Party, and is one reason why a lot of senior people around David Cameron regard Boris as utterly unreliable character.
On May the 1st, Boris Johnson was to prove more popular than his party leader, bucking the national polls to be re-elected. That momentum has continued since. A poll this week on Conservative Home, an influential website, found that Mr. Johnson has popular support among grassroots Tories to be the party's next leader should Mr. Cameron be replaced. That was followed by another for YouGov in The Sun, which revealed that if Boris Johnson was party leader, Labour's lead over the Tories would be cut to just a single point. There are those who have long argued that the mayor craves a bigger stage. Biographer Andrew Jimson.
There's absolutely no doubt that although he loves being mayor of London, he regards it as a stage on his route to 10 Downing Street. He couldn't run for the Tory leadership himself, and he was regarded as too unreliable by Tory MPs. And that is why he decided he got to do this grand flanking manoeuvre, try to become mayor of London and make his name and become a sort of serious contender for the top job.
Boris Johnson's politics, as he himself might put it, are a goulash of contradictions. A mix of traditional and progressive. He relishes tax cutting, but also embraces large-scale state projects. He understands what makes a grassroots Tory member tick, but has an instinctive feeling for left-leaning London too. All of which adds to his appeal, says Tim Montgomery of Conservative Home.
The Conservative Party, which hasn't now won a general election since 1992, looks at this hugely popular figure and they think the winner that they've been looking for a very long time might be the Mayor of London.
But even some of his admirers have yet to be convinced. Michael Howard says so far he hasn't been put to the test.
There's a big difference, I think, between being Mayor of London and being Prime Minister, or even being a Cabinet Minister. Most Cabinet Ministers have to take very important decisions day by day, which affect the lives of millions of people, in a way in which the Mayor of London, whoever the Mayor is, does not have to do. And Boris has not been tested in any of those jobs.
Nevertheless, to date, the Olympics are proving a big win for brand Boris. Few would blame the Prime Minister, as some in the press claim, for looking on green-eyed as the Mayor wallows in the limelight. To lead the party, he would first need to get back into Parliament. But with a coalition seemingly mired in unpopularity, Tim Montgomery says that Mr. Johnson is well placed to pounce.
I get the sense that Britain might be talking about these Olympics for many years to come. I think it might be an occasion when the country looks back and feels very proud of how we ran the Games. Boris has probably become the politician most associated with something that might quickly become a huge national success. And that association for him could be political gold in the years to come.
Thank you for downloading that edition of Profile. The reporter was James Silver, and the programme was produced by Gail Champion. For more details of our downloads, please go to the Radio 4 website.